Hi, true crime listeners. We're your hosts.
I'm Adriana.
And I'm Cody. Today we're going to talk about a case that is pretty upsetting and difficult to talk about. This case took place in Bolton, Vermont on Saturday, October 16th, 2021. And this case is still ongoing. A couple traveled to Vermont to celebrate their one-year wedding anniversary, and only one of them would return home alive. This is Wicked Killings.
So our story takes place in Bolton, Vermont, and this town is incredibly tiny in my opinion. According to boltonvt.com, Bolton is a town located in Chittenden County and is in the Burlington region of Vermont.
Beautiful country up there.
This town is located in the Green Mountains near the Lake Champlain Valley. The Winooski River, pretty cool name, runs through the town as well as Interstate 89, the New England Central Railway, and U.S. Route 2. In June of 1763, Bolton was founded, and the community is described as tight-knit, with acres of forested land, recreational trails, majestic ridgelines, rugged rocky outcrops, and valley bottom cropland. A lot of big words there. I found a website called boltonvalley.com that outlines all of the activities that the town offers in the summer, such as mountain biking, disc golf, summer camps, hiking. They've got live music, lodging, and even some scenic lift rides.
Probably on the ski mountains they got.
Yeah, it would be so pretty around this time of year, too, with all the foliage and everything. And they also offer things in the winter as well. So they have lift tickets and passes, various lessons for skiing, snowboarding, even snowshoeing.
Should go up there, shred some natas when hammer down.
They have equipment rentals. They do tuning and leases. They even have an indoor skate park. And they offer after school or homeschool programs, which is pretty cool. So from what I could see, this resort is used by many, whether they're residents or they're on vacation. According to VermontDemographics.com, it was reported in 2020 that Bolton has a population of 1,301 people.
That's not many.
No, not at all. And Bolton is in the 132nd most populated city in the state of Vermont out of 278 cities. Which seems pretty crazy because that is such a small amount of people.
Yeah, that's a know your neighbor type of area.
And know everyone's business kind of area. So I couldn't find the exact crime index for Bolton, but I was able to find that the rate of crime there is slightly lower than the average U.S. city. So Bolton is in the 61st percentile for safety, meaning 39% of cities are safer than Bolton, and 61% of cities are more dangerous. So that makes sense based off of how many people live in that small town.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that you have an idea of what this town is like, let's get into the details of this story.
Isn't Ben and Jerry's around that area? They're like in Stowe.
Burlington.
Burlington.
Yeah, they make amazing ice cream, and it's such a small little shop, but it's so cool. I love going to...
Oh, the Ben and Jerry's factory is up there.
It is there as well.
They make all the fucking stuff.
Yeah.
You go there, eat ice cream, your heart's content.
Yeah, it's like the store that they have there in Burlington. It's right on, I want to say Church Street. It's like the main strip there where all the shopping centers and different little markets and restaurants are. I don't know if you haven't been there, have you?
I have been there.
Okay. Yeah, it's an amazing place. Okay. So this story is just so sad and disturbing. And I'll start off by telling our listeners that the story does involve domestic violence and is definitely not suitable for all of our listeners.
If you haven't listened before, this is a pretty explicit show.
Yes. So viewer discretion is always advised. So I've been following this case since the victim was reported missing by her parents, and I had a feeling that her husband was involved somehow.
usually is, right?
Yep. And actually, one of our family members brought this case up as new material for our next episode, and I'm really glad that she did.
Thanks.
thank you very much. So our victim was 22-year-old Emily Ferlazzo. According to NBC Boston, she was reported missing to the Vermont State Police by her family around 7:15 p.m. on Monday, October 18th. As soon as Emily's husband, 41-year-old Joseph Ferlazzo, informed them that she was missing. So her mother and stepfather told police that their daughter and her husband were visiting Vermont for a camping trip to celebrate the couple's one-year wedding anniversary. And she had been traveling from New Hampshire to Vermont with her husband and was last seen Saturday afternoon at an Airbnb in Bolton, state police said.
Okay.
So we have that kind of.
So last seen with the husband.
Last seen with the husband, yes. So police said that they began an investigation that has since expanded from the Bolton area to include locations in Enosburg and St. Albans. And Joseph, Emily's husband, told her family that the couple had been staying at an Airbnb in Bolton. According to the union leader, crews of people had been searching for Emily in the Bolton, Enosburg, and St. Albans areas in Vermont. So police later located Joseph at a convenience store in St. Albans on Tuesday, October 19th. And he agreed to accompany state police back to their station. Upon questioning Joseph, it was discovered that he told Emily's family that the two of them got into some sort of an argument while in their camper van around 1 o'clock p.m. on Saturday, October 16th, and that Emily got out of the van and started walking on Route 2 near the Bolton Valley Resort Access Road. So once again, another couple that gets into an argument.
Right. How convenient for him. She just decided to walk away all of a sudden.
All of a sudden during an argument. And with this camper van, so this is what they've been traveling in whenever they go on vacations or go on long drives. So they actually, I don't know what it's called, where they renovate it into, it's like a mini house inside the van.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a camper van.
Camper van. Just... I didn't really know what that was, but just in case anyone else doesn't know. So, Joseph also told family members that he went to a nearby store, and when he returned to pick Emily up a little later, imagine that, he couldn't find her.
Wow.
According to the state police, that's exactly what he told them happened. So, as you can imagine, Joseph was questioned very extensively by the police on October 19th regarding his wife's whereabouts. According to Vermont State Police Major Dan Trudeau, when Joseph met with detectives, he was able to provide them with a good amount of information to include his confession. He confessed to police that he killed his wife Emily in Bolton, Vermont on Saturday, October 16th.
Fucking piece of shit. On their 1 year wedding anniversary.
Yeah, it's very horrible. According to vtdigger.org, Joseph Ferlazzo told police that he and his wife Emily arrived in Bolton between 7 and 8 o'clock at night on Friday, October 15th. Joseph also told police that his sister had been renting a room through a local Airbnb, and after the couple visited his sister and her boyfriend, Joseph Ferlazzo proceeded to tell police that he and his wife were in the camper van and that they were arguing. He told police that Emily was lying on the bed when he grabbed his Glock handgun from inside a cabinet and jumped on top of her, shooting her twice in the head.
Twice? Jesus. You twice. Only need one there, fucking
twice Ferlazzo. In the head.
What the fuck's his name? Ferlazzo?
Joseph. Their last name is Ferlazzo.
Fucking Joe.
What a horrible thing to do, and just so cold that he would shoot her in the head, literally, while she was laying down.
Back of the head.
Joseph then said that he placed, this part's horrible, He placed a garbage bag over her head and moved her to the bathroom area of the camper van. On Saturday morning, hours after the murder, Joseph told police that he went with his sister and her boyfriend to get breakfast in Waterbury, Vermont.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Just casually getting some fucking Eggs Benedict.
After you kill your wife.
After you kill your wife for 1 year.
In cold.
Cold blood.
Just horrible. Killed her
cold blood in your camper van.
So after they ate breakfast, Joseph said that he returned to the camper van and moved it from Bolton to a friend's home on Meadowbrook Lane in St. Albans Town. Once the camper van was moved, Joseph told police that this is when he used a handsaw to dismember his wife, Emily Ferlazzo's body, placing body parts in garbage bags in the camper van.
Jesus, what does this guy think? He's fucking Dexter?
I don't know who he thinks he is,
fucking
but
cutting her up,
he is her in... a messed up person.
Yeah.
So not only did he shoot her twice in the head while she was laying down, but he dismembered his wife's body. Naturally, the police wanted to get a warrant as soon as possible to search the camper van that Emily and Joseph owned. Luckily, the police were issued a warrant pretty quickly, which is exactly what they needed. As police began to search the camper van, they said that they found garbage bags with human remains in them that they believed to be Emily's.
Probably most fucking likely.
I know. I don't. Who else's remains would
they be?
Unless
he's killing other people, too.
Exactly. I don't know. Wouldn't surprise me. So they also found a handsaw behind the driver's seat and a Glock handgun sitting on the bed. The police then scheduled an autopsy to be performed in Burlington, Vermont, to confirm the identity of the remains. I feel like that's just a formality, and they always
have to do it. Dental records and shit like that.
Even if they know. So according to News10.com, the autopsy on Wednesday ruled Emily's death a homicide and confirmed that she died of gunshot wounds to the head.
Yep, most likely.
No surprise there. And side note, the couple, their dog, a mixed breed dog named Remington, was located Tuesday at the home of a friend of Joseph Ferlazzo's. So while he was doing all of these things to his wife and with her body afterwards, he had the time to bring his dog to a friend's house.
Yeah, he probably didn't want the dog there lapping up the blood from the floor.
Because they will eat it.
They don't know.
They don't know.
At least he didn't kill the dog.
Right. Thankfully. So what I really wanted to know was if this was the first time that Joseph had been violent with Emily, because some people snap, whereas others have had some sort of pattern of abuse leading up to murdering their spouse or their significant other. So according to NBCBoston.com, in the police affidavit made public following the arraignment, investigators did write that Emily's mom had described her daughter as surviving several previous instances of domestic violence in their marriage, which had left her with scratches and bruises.
Wow. He was a real fucking piece of work, this guy.
I know. It's just disgusting, honestly. Emily's grandmother, Juanita Schwarz, told the Associated Press that she had only met Joseph once, and she knew right away that something was off with him. She told News 10 that something didn't click the first time that she met him, and she couldn't quite put her finger on what it was about him, but she knew that she didn't like him. She said that his eyes looked evil.
Well, she wasn't wrong.
She wasn't wrong. I know.
Nice job, Juanita.
She probably didn't know just how evil he was.
She had it.
But she had some sort of inkling about it.
Right.
So when she heard that Emily was missing, she immediately thought the worst. Her grandmother even said this: "When I heard about it, I had that feeling. I know she is dead and they will never find her alive." It just like gives you goosebumps hearing that. Her grandmother would say that.
Yeah, that's really sad.
It's so sad. So this is just obviously heartbreaking to read, because Emily's family members knew that her husband was abusive and I didn't find any further information on if her family had tried to intervene or say anything to her about it on the side. I know domestic violence relationships can be really difficult to approach because sometimes if other people get involved, especially your family, can actually make the abuse in the relationship a lot more dangerous and a lot worse.
Yeah, it can make the beatings more frequent and violent.
Yes. And I can't imagine what her family is going through and the grief that they must be experiencing. It just must be horrible. The LaconiaDailySun.com published a wonderful obituary for Emily Fralazzo that outlined who she truly was and how much life she had to give to those around her. The obituary stated, Emily Jean was born on July 25th, 1999 in Plymouth, New Hampshire, bringing great joy to her family. She was a beautiful, aspiring singer. American Idol does not know what they missed. Her infectious personality was uncontainable. She loved everything bright and sparkly, just like her. The things that brought Emily joy were shopping at the mall, turtles, her cat Oreo, and her dog Remy. She always made time for shenanigans with her best friend Lauren, which typically involved bikinis in the summer at Hampton Beach. With her family, she experienced many adventures like camping trips to Acadia, hiking, and rock climbing. Emily attended schools in Hopkinton and Orford and graduated from Concord High. During her school years, she participated in and was passionate about cross country and track and field. Emily went on to earn her LNA license and became a proud LNA. She found joy in her work caring for others. In her spare time, she was delighted to dress up and volunteer at the New Hampshire Renaissance Fair. Emily's dream was to become a cosmetologist and to help make people feel good about themselves, something she herself struggled with from time to time. Even in her darkest moments, her hope and determination to survive shone brightly. She always persevered and fought for what was right. Emily loved going on adventures, knowing she could always come back home to her mom, Adrienne. One of her newfound passions was to travel and explore the world.
Well, she had the van for it.
And I'm pretty sure that that's a big reason why she had the van in particular, was to travel and go on all these different vacations and adventures. And unfortunately,
stopped short from a fucking jabroni.
Yep. Her husband, horrible person. So I actually looked up Emily Fralazzo on Facebook. And I was able to find her profile right away. The only thing that I can describe her as is radiant. So she posted a lot of selfies on her profile. And she also posted a ton of pictures with her husband. I noticed that the majority of the pictures with her and Joseph featured the two kissing. And I know neither of us really show very much PDA. And I was surprised to see how frequently Emily and Joseph were showing so much affection and how many pictures they were taking of them kissing each other.
Probably to counterbalance the fact that he was beating on her.
Yeah, you could be right.
It seemed like they had a wonderful relationship.
But the part that surprised me was how genuinely happy she looked. Unlike one of the other cases we did where
She looked scared in the photos of her and her husband.
Right, and maybe
the previous one, but
this one was different. And maybe I don't know. It just was surprising that she looked so happy, regardless of the.
Maybe she always thought it was gonna. The last time he beat on her was gonna be the last time.
That's what a lot of people think.
You know, so she was probably always hopeful that it would get better, but.
But it didn't.
It obviously didn't.
I know.
And that fucking piece of shit's going to have to rot in jail now.
As he deserves. So I did find that Emily posted a life event update to Engaged on September 25th of 2020. But I couldn't even find an update about when she started dating Joseph. Or what most people would call, like, when were they Facebook official. This seemed weird to me. And to top it off, the first picture that she had posted on Facebook of her and Joseph was on July 27th, 2020, where someone commented about how happy she looked. So based on that information, it doesn't seem like the couple dated for very long before they got married last year.
Right.
So I thought that was kind of weird.
Well, maybe they rushed into it and then...
Right, a whirlwind romance or something.
Yeah, and then problems arise and then all of a sudden he started beating on her.
And he was 20 years older than her.
He was?
Yeah, so she was 22 and based off of this, he's 41. Yeah, so he's definitely much older.
Yeah, he's a lot older than she
is. Not like age really matters, but it did kind of get me thinking, like, how did they meet? Was it
probably just
online dating? That's what a lot of people do nowadays.
Could have been Tinder or mutual friends or whatever.
Right, who knows? I was able to find Joseph's Facebook profile just from the little snapshot of her online friends. And his profile seemed to have a lot more private settings than Emily's did. Especially because Emily's Facebook now has like the status of remembering, which they usually do when someone has passed away.
Yeah.
So it's now viewable by the public and anyone can post on her wall. Whereas maybe before it wasn't like that. So Joseph didn't seem to post very much from what I could see. And he only had one previous profile picture that had Emily in it from last year around this time. I noticed that his facial expression seemed a lot more serious in all of his pictures that he uploaded, including the one that he took with his wife, which is kind of odd. But the pictures that she would take, he looks like a totally different person. It's just creepy how different he looks on his own account versus his wife. And I think that if you all saw his pictures, you would definitely agree with me here when I say that it's very disturbing how different he seems. I would like to point out how much support Emily and her family have received on her Facebook profile. And that just shows how many people want Joseph to be brought to justice. There's a ton of random people who must be following this case, kind of like us, who just happened to come across the case and were following it. And a lot of people have kind of reached out to Emily's family through her Facebook account.
Yeah. Hoping that he gets tried and committed.
Right. And things like, she was taken too soon, and things like that.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Right. So, according to Oxygen.com, on Wednesday, October 20th, Joseph Ferlazzo was charged with first-degree murder in the death of his 22-year-old wife, Emily Ferlazzo.
Jesus, 22 years old. That's so young.
So young. Very, very young.
So sad.
I know. He is currently being held without bail at the Northwest State Correctional Facility in St. Albans, Vermont. His lawyer did enter a plea of not guilty at his arraignment. I never understand why people enter as not guilty when clearly you're guilty and you've even...
He confessed.
Confessed. I just...
He's probably trying to get a shorter sentence or something.
Something. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know enough about the legal aspect to know why someone would do that.
Well, he doesn't want to get butt raped by a large inmate.
Hold up.
That was a quote in Sublime.
Okay. I see what you did there. So the first court hearing that took place was done virtually, like many other cases that are going to trial right now because of COVID-19 pandemic, of course.
Yeah.
I think that this case will take a while to actually come to a close. And at this time, he doesn't have a final sentence. It's just kind of up in the air right
now. Yeah, he's still in jail.
Still in jail, not getting out anytime soon, regardless of when he's finally sentenced.
Still getting three hots in a cot.
What's that from?
No, it's That's just what people say, I
guess. Okay.
People in prison. Three hots and a cot.
Are you saying cot?
Yeah.
Or cock?
Cot. Oh. I'm not saying cock. I mean, he might be it. I don't know. Whatever floats
your boat.
I was
like, oh my goodness, here we go again. Okay. So, safe to assume he'll stay behind bars until he's sentenced, and then from then on, he'll still be behind bars for who knows what period of time. And according to lawjustia.com, in New Hampshire, when someone is convicted of a murder in the first degree, they are sentenced to life in prison, and they aren't eligible for parole ever. This doesn't necessarily mean that he will remain in prison for the rest of his life, though, which is kind of weird. I always associate life in prison as you're there until you die.
Right, you're there for life.
But it's kind of confusing because there are different definitions of life imprisonment. And by this, I mean that someone could be sentenced anywhere from 15 years to 60 years in prison, okay. Depending on it, like, depends on the state and the country.
Right.
So who knows how long he'll be? It could be 15, it could be 20, 30, who knows? But we'll find out at some point. So that is the story of Emily Ferlazzo up until today. And as we had mentioned, that this case is still very much ongoing, and we can only give as much information as the public has at this time.
Well, yeah, we're the public.
We're the public, so doing the research. That's all that I could find currently. And who knows, maybe further down the road, we could do just a quick update about what's happening with the case once he is finally sentenced and what's happened since then.
Right.
And I know that we are no longer in the month of October, which is the Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We're still in November, and I still wanted to touch on this story as it did occur in October, roughly a month ago. So according to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men have experienced some form of physical violence by an intimate partner. And intimate partner violence accounts for 15% of all violent crimes. I thought it would be helpful to explain the domestic violence statistics in both New Hampshire and Vermont, just because they were New Hampshire residents, but the crime occurred in Vermont. So it's kind of a mix up between the two.
Right.
So 34.7% of New Hampshire women and 35.4% of New Hampshire men experience intimate partner physical violence, intimate partner sexual violence, and or intimate partner stalking within their lifetimes. And in fact, 39.2% of Vermont women and 30.9% of men experience intimate partner physical violence, intimate partner rape, or intimate partner stalking. In 2020, there were 15 homicides in Vermont, 53% of which were the result of domestic violence.
Wow.
I know.
That's a high number.
High number. And children were present in half of the domestic violence homicides.
Holy shit.
Whether that means in the home.
Right.
Right next to it as it was occurring. But the fact that their kids are home, I just... Murder's never okay. But when your children... are there, it just brings it to a whole other level, especially yeah. in the court system.
It's like a whole other level of evil to do yeah. it in front of your child.
In front of your kids. Yeah, it's horrible. And in 2020, 50% of domestic violence homicides involved firearms. So I know we talked about this last time. Definitely happens. Domestic violence where there are weapons such as guns of all types involved.
Right.
I think that's just kind of inevitable. If people have guns in their home.
Yeah. The pieces of shit who have guns yeah. in their house beat their wives or
their husbands.
Or wives beating their husbands.
Right.
Probably could likely lead to somebody getting shot.
with one of the guns.
Whether it's self-defense on the person who's getting beat, or it's the person killing their significant other. Like this case.
Exactly like this case. So Vermont does have a law that prohibits domestic violence, dating violence, and stalking, I guess, misdemeanors? I don't know if that's the right word, from possessing firearms. So anyone who's been convicted of one of those crimes cannot have a firearm. And although Vermont law does not prohibit domestic violence protective orders, this part's a little confusing. They can grant final protective orders to, I guess, those that are released from jail or convicted of a domestic violence crime. The courts are authorized to order whatever they deem necessary in order to protect the victims or survivors. Okay. And that usually does mean that they can't possess firearms.
Right.
They're pretty strict about it whenever possible. And I mean, this is just really important in domestic violence cases, because these laws are there for a reason, to try to just keep people as safe as possible. Once again, it's all of our duties to advocate against domestic violence at all times. If you or someone that you know is experiencing domestic violence, please reach out to the Domestic Violence Hotline, 1-800-799-7233, or your local hotline in your state. We want all of our listeners to know that we hear you, we believe you, and we stand with you. We thank each and every one of you for taking the time to listen to our newest episode of our podcast. And until next time, this is Wicked Killings.
Yes, sir. Stay wicked.